Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go! Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. This is a bonus-ode after a Giants win, so it'll be nice and cheerful.
Really enjoying this drinking and celebration.
This is two nice bonus-odes in a row that we've
that
won.
This is crazy. Yeah, this is weird.
This hasn't happened this year yet.
I'm really liking this change from drinking out of despair. It feels entirely different.
It's a happy
victory
drunk.
Drinking.
The beers taste mysteriously the same, but that's not the point.
The other good thing about this bonus-ode is we got the whole crew here.
We haven't done this in a while.
Minus, of course, the ladies who are not here. No Jen Cosgrove today.
No
Allie Williams.
So let's just end it right now.
But we do have myself, Willie
Dills.
So we're
quitting.
We've also got Chad King, and then, of course, Ben Lee is back. What's up, Ben?
Hey.
Didn't actually make it into the press box with us because you actually had a
I had a real ticket for the actual video gamer night. It's great. Yeah. It was great.
No, so you're the only one who has the
video gamer night because we're gamers, but are we video gamers?
Gamer babe night? That would be, people would tweet about how that's sexist.
I was going to say, video gamer babe night would definitely be sexist because all the video gamers don't believe such a thing exists and all the video gamer babes are really pissed they don't believe it exists. So. Anyway.
So you are the only one who got the sweet bobblehead, though. Or it's not even a bobblehead. It's just like a figure.
It's a McFarlane figure. Yeah. So it's really nice detail.
It's Assassin's Creed. It's based on,
the
newest
game. About it, even though if I take it out, no one can see this since we're recording audio.
Well, yeah, but whatever. We can describe it.
I thought it was like a Peter Griffin or Stewie bobblehead.
Before we get into the before we get into the actual game, we will talk. Let's talk briefly about the gamer night thing.
Yeah, I mean, we brought up on the last podcast that it's always going to be a focus of us because it's something we like, and so it's kind of neat that
we all like video games. We all like the Giants. It was like the perfect combination of those two things.
And I think they realized that, which is kind
of
nice.
We considered briefly doing some sort of a TortureCast type of meetup thing, but then the tickets situation was weird. Couldn't get tickets together. So that didn't end up happening. And we had a mini one of sorts. Our friend Cameron was here, and then also Mike was here tonight, so there was plenty of TortureCast fans in the house. I want to get your guys' impression of the pre-game event. I guess it was cool. I was expecting more. I think they could have done a little more with it,
I'm sure they could have done more with it, but they were sort of... They pointed out that it was the first one that has been done by Major League Baseball, which I started to be a little surprised by, and then remember that we're San Francisco, and went, actually, I'm not that surprised when I think of it.
How many other teams do, like, a lot of the nights we do?
Filipino Heritage Night.
A Filipino Heritage Night,
This is a city that doesn't just embrace culture.
Star Wars Day?
Now everyone does that.
Now everyone does that?
Oh, God,
Do they really? That's a thing now?
Almost bought by Disney. It's like a league-wide thing.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's really?
Almost every team does that now.
That's lame.
Maybe all of them. I'd love to know if there's one that doesn't now. But as far as, like, these individual different nights of appreciation for things, this one was made a little bit bigger. There was an event. Yeah. There was a special event giveaway. That was a big deal.
There was speakers. This was
physical speakers.
A mini con type of moment. It was a panel. I got to say, though, I felt...
As people who have seen panels... Mm-hmm. I think we all knew that it was a pretty lackluster panel.
It was thrown together. Todd McFarlane did his thing. He came out and he brought it as much as he could.
The guys from Machinima were entertaining. They had some things to say.
But I feel like it was the people didn't have much to do with each other. They were all definitely like in the gaming world, but then the girl who was interviewing them didn't seem to know that much about them. Was kind of throwing out general gaming questions, and I was hoping
for IGN. It's not like she doesn't know anything.
I'm sure she does.
But the way that the panel was put together, especially the attempt to sort of tie it directly into baseball instead of sort of assuming everyone around you is a baseball fan that's already interested in video games, it was sort of a let's pander to the occasion a little bit.
Sure.
And I definitely
if I was in charge of it, though, I would have done something more like, here's some guys, we'll introduce them, we'll talk to each one briefly, and then we'll just do questions from the audience, and then a quick meet and greet.
Which they did move to eventually, towards the end.
But it kind of seemed like a lot of the time was that we bounced a little bit before that, I guess, but we just kind of...
No, they were pretty much done. And, when we left.
Yeah. No, I mean, they did questions for a little bit afterwards.
Oh,
they had
from
a couple
the audience?
Of neat ones. Yeah. Okay. I didn't catch all of them. I had moved a little farther away to kind of look around what few other things were there. They also didn't have a ton of other stuff. It was literally like, here's the place where we're doing the speaking.
Yeah, there wasn't anything else going
concessions,
on. Really.
The giveaway stand. And
the other thing, too, was before the panel, like, there's some missed opportunities. Before the panel, there was just kind of standard pop hit music playing.
Yeah, after as well.
Could
the
have
first
done,
thing they cut right into was Usher's "Yeah," which is exactly what you expect.
Plenty of gaming specific DJs
bang, bang
out
into
there.
The room, you know.
You could have grabbed a ton of different DJs who do like 8-bit
I mean,
music and all of it pulled out of video games.
In San Francisco,
games.
Too.
It's
like,
not hard to find a guy who does that.
No,
here. Seriously.
No.
There's like
I think
five
they just
or six I know.
Pandora
of.
Top hits
yeah.
or something.
It did
yeah.
kind of.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It did seem a little bit like they had. A set of just sort of like standard issue. Here's what we do for events thing, and sort of rolled it out.
Yeah. And I'm fine with it. Whatever, it's fine. Like I'm not gonna put down the Giants for that. But I feel like if you're gonna do these really kind of cool theme events, it would be nice to bring in maybe one person who, rather than like here we'll bring in somebody and just get some guests and here's a giveaway. Like bring in somebody who can like put the little finishing touches on it because. These are all gamers. Like, you know how gamers
sort it all
are.
Together. Gamers like detail.
Yeah. When we come and we see this event,
we expect
we
a certain level.
See, yeah, we've gone to the thing. BlizzCon, the Dragon Con.
I don't think anybody expected BlizzCon out of this.
No. But you know,
but
what
you
mean.
Certainly like. But you can't help comparing something that feels like a panel, to a panel, and going well.
So you just want that experience of like this is
like I'm
these
here for,
is
I'm
brought
here
to me by gamers.
I'm here for something. I'm not just like here for the Assassin's Creed figure, and incidentally here's a panel. I'd like to at least be around.
All these gamers wearing Giants gear in the crowd, awesome. Obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, who's not going to be wearing that?
I mean, that
but you had
see.
McFarlane. He was entertaining. He was fine. You know, he had little anecdotes about playing Pac-10 baseball, which...
Apparently he played college baseball.
I really don't know if that really happened, but...
Well, he said he was
going to
throw a
strike. He did grow up in San Jose, by the way, which was odd.
Yeah, he
I
said he was going to throw a strike when he threw the first pitch out.
Say,
it was not a strike.
No,
it was a very it was a very fast ball, though.
No. Yeah, he threw it like he knew how to throw a baseball. Yeah,
definitely threw it like he threw a baseball. It just got amped up a little bit.
Yeah,
but...
You know, those rookie pitchers first time on the mound.
As you do,
the Machinima guys, the one guy, despite the fact that he was a Dodgers fan, he was pretty entertaining. Yeah, he played it off really well. But it was that first developer guy, and, I mean, I don't think they prepped him at all, because he was kind of out there, and he's like, yeah, I don't know anything about baseball. Yeah, I'm Canadian. Yeah, I like hockey. Yeah,
well,
like,
she specifically
no, there's
asked
no giant
him.
Players that I think are in, that would
she
be,
specifically
be in the
asked
game.
Him
yeah.
and put him on the spot, and I was like, didn't you, before the
That's
panel,
what I mean. They didn't
ask
him,
him, like, hey,
you
do you know about baseball?
I
like,
would think, any Giants player could be in the game. It's like, you don't even know who... The Giants are basically. Is
yeah, that's fine,
that's,
whatever.
That's
but don't ask him a question. But that was the problem.
Yeah.
It's not his fault. He doesn't know.
No, not at all. That's what
I
mean.
That was, it was
awkward.
It was super awkward. It showed a lot of promise. It was awkwardly done, but it was a nice sort of outreach by the Giants to say, "Hey, this is a community that we recognize."
I guess though,
well, it'd be like if I was a developer and I was doing a pregame thing for the San Jose Earthquakes. No offense, Ben, but if they asked me which one of the Earthquakes would be in your video game, I'd be like, I don't know any of the Earthquakes, but I like baseball.
I don't soccer well.
Exactly.
But the thing, here's what I'm gonna, here's the point I want to make is that the Giants do a lot of the social media and the events and all that stuff really well, and I want them to succeed at this kind of stuff. And if they do this kind of stuff, they could easily find someone who will jump on board and be like the expert who will give them feed them ideas. And I used to actually talk to some dudes who ran events, and he asked me ideas about their poker event one time.
Right.
And I was like, "Well, give out poker chips first of all, and do that, and then get like
Antonio
Esfandiari, and you know, and basically like get a poker player, and then have people like, you know, play a hand of poker, like get something going where you're getting because like what if they had like, you know."
Like
Hunter Pence didn't even know
setup.
About it, by the way. Like, you got Hunter Pence out there. He's your gamer on the team.
Well, you couldn't have before game time.
But you can a certain amount of time before game. The players participate in this kind of stuff before the game.
Sometimes.
I mean, I've seen him doing it. So,
fair enough.
But, I mean, you could have had, like, Hunter Pence and me play a Hearthstone game against each other. live in front of the audience.
Let's get the heck going. Guys,
you know?
Let's make that happen.
Yeah. Billy Dills,
well,
and
not,
the Angry
not
Chicken.
Just that, but I mean, just, you know, have Hunter Pence play a single game of Hearthstone against somebody.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, be like, and I'm going to build a Giants deck. And then, I'm going to build the Dodgers deck. And then it's like, all my guys are going to have stealth because we're dodging. And whatever. Like, he could have done
San Francisco Giants card backs.
Oh, my God. But there's Giants in the game. There's cards called Molten Giants and Mountain Giants. And
oh, yeah.
Sea Giants. It's like, so I'm going to make the Giants deck. Like, that, you know, would have been sweet. But anyway, it was fine. Just,
there could have been more.
It could have been more.
It could have been up to a level that we've seen from the Giants in the past.
We fed Sprabian all those gold ideas when we had him on the show. Not a single one has been done yet.
It's amazing.
Where's Cat Maze of October?
Yeah, that's right.
That's just what I was thinking.
All right, let's talk about the game. Because,
about the actual game.
Yeah, so that was a good game. It was a strange game.
It was a game that I definitely, like, I felt like everything should be completely different, and then we hit the seventh inning, and I was like, oh, now it lines more or less up with what it felt like.
Well, okay, so we know...
It felt like we should have been down by, like, a run by the time
The way that Vogelsong started out, he was rocky as hell. He had 3 walks within the first 2 innings. And he basically just looked like, I mean, he was pitching around everybody, it seemed like. And, if you're watching on TV, you can probably tell a little more than we can. From press box, we can kind of get a sense, and we got the TVs there.
Can't really see his face a lot,
pitches,
or the little,
watching the game,
the nonverbal stuff.
But it just felt to me like he was a little nibbly.
Yeah.
You know, I guess maybe he was just missing, but it just looked like he
was
a
little
nibbling.
Like there was, he was getting a tight zone because he wasn't finding. He wasn't.
Oh yeah, you get a tight zone when you can't throw
it. Yeah, he wasn't establishing that he had the zone, so he was getting a tight zone. But also, just like there was a bunch of things that he would just—they would just kind of roll off to the outside a little bit.
Yeah. But here's the thing,
keep in mind, I was in 315, so I was like dead behind home plate. So all I really got
like
was
right
side to side.
Yeah.
I couldn't get up and down.
Yeah.
So I've got no height perception.
It was an interesting one though, because not only was Vogelsong struggling, but Kolmenter I felt like was also struggling. But neither one were giving up hits, though.
It was the reverse, though, for me. I felt like...
But he had... I mean, he only had 2 walks, but he was getting
stronger.
A lot of 3-ball counts.
I feel like Vogelsong started weaker than he ended.
He ended
stronger.
Our second half was stronger.
Moved the opposite direction.
And then,
yeah.
So they both definitely hit trouble, but Kolmenter hit trouble later.
But Kolmenter didn't look sharp, I wouldn't say. Like, he was kind of getting away with stuff.
Sharp.
You know,
in fairness, I mean, Kolmenter sharp is really similar to, you know, like, Brandon McCarthy off. But Kolmenter has been sharper than he was today.
Yeah. He's a middle-of-the-road guy.
We
expect to win a game when you look at it and you say
kind of guy.
Vogelsong versus Kolmenter. You expect that the Giants have the upper hand in that game.
It's true, but Kolmenter has surprised us before. And like early Kolmenter last year was a big deal, but he really has kind of regressed back a little bit. But Kolmenter has that weird deceptive delivery, though, the one it comes right overhead.
Yeah, he's 12-6. He's right over the top.
And
he doesn't even look like
a pitcher. A big guy, too.
The way that he throws, though, it's not just a 12-6 ball, it's a 12-6 delivery. It's so because it'll come over the top when he throws, and it just doesn't... The ball just looks different when it's coming at you like that. And definitely, it helps him. But it only helps him so much. Like, if he can't also establish command and also establish movement, he becomes a one-trick pony. And you saw the Giants on the second time through the lineup actually go, okay, now I've had a chance to see this again. You know, so I remember what this weird 12-6 thing is like. Why don't I try going opposite? And that was exactly what Pecan did to get the first hit of the game, is go the other way and just slapped it the direction that Kolmenter gave him.
So after, like, 5 innings, I think it was, 2 or 3 hits total in the game, right?
It's 4 hits total.
4 hits total in the game.
Yeah, Giants had 3, and Diamondbacks had 1.
Yeah.
And then Vogie only gave up 2 hits through
2 hits,
through
and both to the same hitter, too.
6
well.
And 2/3.
The entire Giants only gave up 2? 3? 2?
No. Vogie pitched 6 and 2/3. He only gave up 2 hits.
Right.
But it was 5 walks
actually,
total.
The entire Giants only gave up 2 hits.
Oh, because...
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a complete... Yeah,
right.
Yeah, no, if you throw in everybody, because none of the bullpen guys gave up anything.
Then Affelt for 1 and Romo for 1.
Yeah. By the way, who got the win?
So...
Who got the win?
That would be
Machi.
It's Machi.
Is it?
Yeah, because he was on the
mound. Because he pitched top of the 7th.
Because he pitched only got 1 out.
1 out.
Yeah. Remember.
That's Machi, right?
This is Machi. This is how
seven?
He does it. He's 7-1.
Yeah, this is how you know it's a good sign. We're getting back to the things we were doing at the beginning of the year.
Exactly.
Like vulturing Machi wins.
We're talking about this on Monday. Machi with 5 wins by May 1st or whatever.
And then he sat there at like 6 wins.
How sweet would it be though if right now like Machi had like 18 wins and Bumgarner had 17?
17.
Sweet.
Machi just like vultures a bunch of wins over the course of the season, beats Kershaw out for the.
I got one out and the
Machi's got a 1.9 ERA.
Mean Gene Machi for the 50s style Cy Young.
He's gonna look like we should give him the MVP at the end of this year when you look at the stats.
Well, let's see if he gets one vote for the Cy Young out of all the riders. That'd be great.
Machi threw two pitches, one of them for a strike.
Were they Cy Young level pitches?
They were.
Two pitches.
Absolutely were.
For the win.
He did induce a ground ball, so I'll give him
that. Bogey goes 102 pitches.
It was not a pretty ground ball.
Doesn't get the win.
No.
Machi pitches two.
Well, here's the other thing, though. Bogey threw 102.
I'm way too tired right now to have my pitcher
59
win
of them were strikes. So
yeah,
he was not struggling in the zone.
Cleaned up a little later. It was like
better later. Yeah.
Well, like 38 pitches in, he was 19-19, like 50% strikes.
Yeah, I think he had like 36-37 in the first two innings. Like he was really struggling.
It was really like for every time he would get a strike, you know. Although I will say, and credit to Hank Shulman for catching this one too, he cleaned up a ton when Lincecum came out.
This was actually one of the in the Bochy post game conference. This was actually one of the questions that was asked, and
that was Hank.
Of this in the game too. Remember, because when he came out,
I remember thinking
I put it in. He was tweeting, and I was doing Reddit, and I said, that was a sweet double move there by Bochy. Like, not only do you warm Lincecum up just in case, but you also fire up Vogie at the same time.
Gets Vogie off.
He was walking back on the mound, and he stopped and looked and was like, holy crap, Lincecum's like, this is the second inning.
Next pitch.
And he he threw a strike, and he got the next guy out. And, you know, and at that moment, it was bases loaded, and he was...
Think so, yeah.
And he had a full count on the pitcher or something like that.
Yeah, he almost walked a run in on the pitcher. Yeah,
he almost walked Cole Mentor. Yeah, I remember
and
that.
So, I mean, that was
right about when they brought Lincecum
out. Like, if he falls apart there,
right down
maybe the whole game falls apart and the Giants never come back.
Absolutely.
But instead, he snaps back and he gets the pitcher out as he's supposed to do, and we move on to win the game. So
Hank asked him, you know, Bochy at the end of the game, and Bochy was like, oh, I didn't even notice that. I mean, he was playing coy.
Do you think that smiled. He smiled,
exactly.
And he kind of laughed.
He was playing coy.
He's a player's manager.
He knows
not just that he manages players well so they think that they're being helped.
Yeah.
He also thinks about how they think.
Yeah. I feel like he smiled a little bit that...
To let
we
us
caught
know.
On.
We would have known anyway.
Yeah, like, oh, you got me. Yeah, you see what I did there. Mm. And I think we know, like, we all know that Bochy makes moves and moves things around in such a way that psychologically helps his own team, like, helps his players out a ton.
I mean, he's
got a knack
smart,
for
dude.
This stuff. Yeah.
That's why he's got over 1,600 wins.
Yeah, by the way, they honored Bochy,
Hudson.
They honored Petit, Hudson, and Peavy before the game for all the historical achievements, and then they said, and Lincecum got that no-hitter one time, but whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that didn't happen last time.
It's not like a record or, it's not a lifetime achievement.
No, but it was all those achievements happening, within like a week.
It was interesting those all happened at the same time.
It was pretty crazy.
That was a lot of things to happen.
2,000 strikeouts for the two. The 46 in a row.
And they honored Lincecum
wins.
By warming him up in the second inning.
Yeah, why not?
Now, if you had thrown a no-hitter last week, they put a big one on the top part of the mound.
Just one baseball.
A baseball.
Yeah, it was nice, though.
Stand
it was,
over a baseball.
It was funny, though, because, again, I feel like, as I'm watching this, though, maybe I'm being a little too critical, but I feel like they should have said Bochy's accomplishment at the end, because you know Bochy's going to get the biggest... ovation out of the three.
Yeah, they did
four
Petit
of those.
At the
doing
end.
Petit
they
at the end was a little weird.
And I understand Petit was a major league record. That's
it
a big
is.
Deal. It's a major league record.
Sure.
I think they should have gone from right to left there and then at the end say, and Bochy, he's like 17th in all time victories as a manager, which is it's like a huge deal. I mean,
but he's not first in consecutive outs.
He doesn't seem like he's anywhere near done either, you know.
Oh, hell no. I mean, he could go for another 15 years. Like, he could.
I mean, I can see him.
Look at guys like, I mean, Connie Mack is the number one guy, right?
Yeah.
And he managed well into his late years.
Yeah.
Like, he just was like, I'm still going, man. What's up?
Yeah,
overall record is under 500. He's got the most wins by, like, a lot.
You take Bochy's career and you stretch it out to the length of, like, Lou Piniella.
Yeah. Well, and Bochy started at a fairly young age for a manager. I think, though, there is a difference between, because you look at the top 20. There's a lot of these real old-timers in there, these guys who were, like, player managers and stuff
like
that.
Right, so
they
were managing while
they were
playing.
Still
they started,
the shortstop, and they were like,
hey,
but you also manage. Like,
you finish, you catch, you throw the guy out, you throw the ball around the horn, and you point at somebody.
You're, like, standing
in
second,
and
you're like, hey, pinch hitting. Get up there.
Yeah, strange. You like, don't see that anymore.
No, I think Pete Rose was like the last guy.
Yeah, because it's so much harder to do.
Who
now,
was the actual last guy? Does anybody know? Eric Nathanson, where are you?
It might be Pete Rose when he was.
He's the last guy
the
I
Phillies
remember because I actually had a baseball card of his that said like first base
manager.
Yeah.
Because Rose was way after Barra.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because I mean, Barra is one of the best known current ones. Or like, wasn't Napolejoy the player manager for a little bit?
I don't know.
Point, I feel like he could have been.
Back when Cleveland was the Cleveland Naps named after
Cleveland.
Him.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, there was just a different. It was a different like.
It was a different
and also,
era. The
like,
game
you think
was
about, like
different.
Connie Mack,
you know,
was like a
defensive shift,
like a shitty baseball player, who then started managing like almost immediately. Like,
yeah.
Started managing when he was like super young because he was like, "Hey, yo, I suck."
He didn't
at
make
this.
It. Yeah,
I suck at this playing.
I'm terrible at actually hitting the ball, but you tell
but
me.
But I
what
really
the,
like
I'll tell
to
these guys
talk
what to
about
do,
it
it'll
and
be
figure
great.
It out. Yeah. But it, you know what's funny is I looked at that after Bochy hit 1600, and it was kind of in the conversation of who's the all-time guy and where's Bochy measure up against these guys. And I looked at it, and you got Connie Mack with like a sub 500 record, and then second is McGraw with like an almost 600 record over his career as a manager.
That's insane.
Jeez. It's crazy to think like you,
but, you know, that's
as a manager that for that long,
McGraw,
you got to have bad
huge
teams in there.
John McGraw is a huge part of why the Giants are one of the winningest teams.
Oh, no,
and,
that
know.
He's like the number one reason why. Like, his second
yeah,
most
I mean,
of wins for a manager.
Yeah.
Like, who
you
else
know,
had
I mean,
more to do with that than him? Nobody.
I mean,
yeah.
Not more to do with it. Like, if you, know, you get like Roger Craig, it certainly had an impact. Bochy's
Roger Craig
had
quite a
but,
lot.
Man, McGraw,
yeah.
Like.
Filippo Lou, absolutely.
I hate you so much.
Well, Dusty Baker,
I like that
had a
pause
lot,
there. That was
Dusty Baker had quite a few. as a
the freeze
manager.
Up and stare was great. That worked out perfectly.
No, it was definitely
really upset at you. What?
Yeah, right. I mean, you can give a lot. You can give a lot of credit to Tommy Lasorda as well. While we're at it.
Well, you know, he did. He passed Lasorda on his 1600th win. Because Lasorda stopped with 1599.
Really?
That's right. That was when he hit 1599. That was sweet. And when he hit 1600, it was much sweeter.
They started doing SlimFast commercials. So he was done with managing. It was time for SlimFast.
Now the question is, what if we were to count each SlimFast commercial as a win?
How
far behind
is
he's
got Bochy. He's got
Bochy. The ones that aired.
Are we counting the ones
he's
on the cutting room floor?
All time SlimFast leader of the world. All right, so
this
game
happens when all three of us are here. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll have another round.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll do a Lagunitas, right, please.
Oy, la calita.
Yes, let me give you that one. Thank you.
What's that?
That's
a recorder.
We're recording.
You're being
right
recorded
now.
Right
you're
now.
On our podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, our new fourth trainer.
Say hi.
Hi, how are you?
Special guest.
Thanks.
But so the game really did kind of, I think, kind of turn on the second inning getting out of that jam and then basically buckling down and at one point getting 9 batters in a row out, I think 9 or 10.
He had 8 in a row, but he had.
I think he got to the 9th one. Let me double check.
Did he get to the 9th one? Then the next inning, he might have.
I think it starts right here. So here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then the double.
Okay, so it was
so 9
and then the double.
And then he gave the double.
And that was
yeah.
only the second hit of the game.
And then the double and then the walk, and that was it for him.
And all 3 Ks happened in one inning, correct?
In the 5th?
Yeah.
Three
he struck out the side.
Yeah,
yeah,
3 straight in the 5th.
But
that was interesting.
Once he. So he gave it the double, and then that Chad actually turned to me and said, you know, this is probably his last bat. Like, he can come out now.
Oh, he was at 98 pitches or whatever it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, and then you get the next guy on the fly ball to the left and then walks the next guy. And Bochy actually did the run to the mound, which he only really does when he's not going
to
necessarily take the guy out.
Yeah.
Like, he
jogged
out.
He wanted to talk to him.
Because he wants to give himself a little more time before the manager walks
out. Yeah,
because
you saw he didn't call for the righty.
Yeah, no, he got out there, he looked. I think he just wanted to see, like, is Bogey, like, mad, good mad Bogey? Or bad, mad Bogey,
right? Mad, good bet.
Where he, you know, doesn't, like, he pitches mad, not like, like, I don't know, there's like a difference between, like,
he's like pitching,
cool
he's pitching
then
frustrated instead of mad.
Yeah.
It's like, don't pitch angry.
Like,
you know,
there's
intense
Bogey, and then there's upset Bogey.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
And when, if he's going to, if his
you want intensity,
start
but you
like
don't
that.
Want him being mad and frustrated with himself.
Yeah, no, I get that. And we've seen both. I mean, we've also seen both with PV, which is really entertaining.
No, and Bochy did a great job because whatever he heard or read from.
Yeah, yeah, he made the right call.
Yeah, he made the right call.
And why not bring in Machi at that point? Even if, like, the only way you don't necessarily.
You're just trying to give Machi a chance to earn a win.
Yeah. But the fact is
that's exactly what Bochy was doing. He's like, I know we're going to score four next inning. So Machi, throw two.
We're coming off of a day off on Monday, right? So.
And we had a day off.
Bullpen's rested.
Last Thursday.
Bullpen's plenty rested. The starting rotation has been like
bullpen is totally rested right now.
We barely needed the bullpen in like 2 weeks for much.
Well, and with the expanded roster, they have a couple extra arms. I mean, there's no issue.
We've been using them. Strickland, Cordier, they've been great.
And yeah, let's talk about the Cordier kid, by the way.
Oh yeah, I mean,
he's pretty exciting, right?
Hit 101 on his first major league inning. I mean,
and lots of 101.
It was 101, but he went a bunch 101. Of like 99, 100. Like
it was the story that John Miller told was hit 101 and then he hit 100 and then he hit 99. We're like, oh, he's got a changeup.
Yeah, that'll fool him.
About that. Yeah. Ah, change in speed.
Yeah. Oh, that was too slow. I think got me.
Yeah,
but he's definitely got to be a little bit excited. Yeah, Strickland has been. And Bochy talked about this.
You know, throwing 98-99 as well. Yeah. I mean, that's high 90s. That's speed we haven't had out of the bullpen in ages.
It's like the Cardinals bullpen. I mean, young guys coming up.
Casilla was like our flamethrower.
Yeah, those guys. Yeah. Oh man.
I guess Gutierrez was our flamethrower really like this season, but he's
he was the flamethrower at 96. You know.
Yeah. Huh?
I just can't.
But he was our flamethrower.
Gutierrez is a flamethrower. It just does not compute in my head.
Casillas, I mean, he throws 95-96.
It's all relative.
That tells you something, though. It's true. And Casillas,
like, we haven't had the 99-100 guy in a long time.
Yeah.
Not since Wilson, pretty much.
Yeah, and even Wilson, though, he was like 98-99 at first.
Down,
and when when we won the World Series, he was throwing the cutter at like 94. That was his deal. So yeah, he was a different pitcher
at that
point.
Enough to get by if you can do it, but
yeah. Well, I think at that point his arm was already hurting.
Oh yeah,
but also he had that thing. It was like the thing that worked. He didn't need to do anything else.
Nope.
Right.
Like I throw this cutter over and over and over again, and you can never hit it.
He figures it worked for Mariano Rivera.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Mariano Rivera made a career out of
one cutter.
Yeah.
But with that said, the guys that we've had, even the most exciting prospects that we brought up in through the bullpen, like. Kickham was loosely exciting for about 10 minutes, or Heath Hembree before we traded him. None of them had really that kind of velocity.
They didn't touch 100.
But that's the thing, often. Too, is Strickland and Cordier, well, okay, Cordier was a little amped up, his first one. Strickland generally makes it look pretty good, too.
Yeah,
and that's what's surprised. Like, Strickland is...
He seems to throw with location.
Strickland looks like he's pretty much major league ready at this point, to be honest.
But, I mean, you know, there's no reason to push him at this point.
No, you don't force the issue.
Fairly short up right now. Like,
right.
It's You've actually, good guys when you on the think team, about
there's
it,
there's no reason to force the issue, but it's just, it's interesting to see some kind of bullpen depth.
Today's game was a good example of what our bullpen is actually capable of, because basically without our closer, we were able to do starter into Machi, into Affeldt, into Romo. And then you think after that could potentially be Casilla if you need him. Like, you know, I mean, there's plenty more guys.
Yeah, if it was a 3-0 game, you would have seen Casilla
instead of Romo.
That would have been the only difference.
Or you would have seen Romo instead of Affeldt too. Like, that's the thing. Like, you could have seen it all could have been reordered basically. It was kind of fun seeing Romo come in though. El Machón played and
in the
night, he got the 27th out, and it was
it was a nice hearkening back.
Yeah, it felt good.
Could have had 3 Ks there because that one check swing
on the replay
it was definitely a swing.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever.
You had to strike out the side. Set himself up, but you know what it sets him up? It sets the bullpen up for is if a closer by committee type of situation needs to happen, because one guy gets too much work or whatever.
We've
you
got
don't
a bunch
feel
of
bad going
can.
To Romo again. Like, he's fine again. Like,
yeah.
He had that like really severe
he had a bad stretch
bump, and now he's old school Romo
seems
again. He's got the slider working.
Well, and it's almost like with either the pressure or workload or just some time to rest or, you know.
Well, the last time he actually really blew up was Colorado, right, where he just sucks in Colorado. Like, because his slider doesn't really work in Colorado.
Yeah,
yeah.
Unless you
count the one, the Detroit outing with
Miguel Cabrera.
Oh, but that didn't
Miguel
hurt
Cabrera.
Us, first of all.
It was a
two-run
one.
Well, you mean like a high leverage blow-up, then.
Yeah, it was a Colorado one where it made us lose a game.
Yeah.
But I figured, like, the Cabrera one, almost was like, that was like his payback. He's too good of a hitter not to pay you back after.
Oh, yeah.
He stands there and watches strike three go by.
Like everyone said.
Yeah.
2 years too late.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, fine. I mean, I can't be upset about Miguel Cabrera.
No. The dude hit like 4 or 5 home runs that Cabrera series. He was really on fire. He was AL Player of the Week that week.
Yeah, I think he hit over 500 against us that series. Yeah, I mean, whatever. He just, you know.
And we won the series, so what's up?
Yeah. So, didn't
so
matter.
In your face.
Didn't matter.
AL Player of the Week.
Inconsequential home runs. Okay. Yeah. No problem.
We were only 3 games out of that week. I'll grant him that. But the Royals also just beat Detroit again today. So.
Yeah, they did.
I want to talk real briefly, though, about how we actually finally did get full clubhouse access today. And Chad here took full advantage. I unfortunately could not get off work until about 4 o'clock, so I didn't get down to the ballpark until about 4:40-ish or so. And then they didn't have my pass, so I had to call Matt Chisholm, and he
and performed
was very,
something.
He was very, some favors. He was immediately like, oh, hey, oh, I'm sorry, really? Okay, I'll have one sent down right now.
Yeah.
And immediately there was one there. Like, I waited outside for like 30 seconds. The guys that were inside were weird, though. They were like, you have to stand outside. And I was like, I guarantee I always have a pass. Like, I'm not here to do anything weird.
Yeah, you're wearing a wife beater and an ascot. They're like, get the fuck out of here, man.
Who is this guy? He's clearly not a press.
I don't know what's going on. Yeah, but I think I'm going to need you to leave.
No, but it was an awkward moment because the guys weren't being very chill about it.
30 seconds later, you can come back.
Exactly, and then here's a pass getting run down to me, so it's fine.
Yeah,
but
the Giants are class.
It was awesome. That it was not a big deal. It was taken care of. But but Chad was, and I was hoping to initially get here at about, 3 o'clock or so? 3:30?
Yeah, they opened up the clubhouse doors at about 3:45. So I got here about 3:15 or so. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you had a couple of very interesting experiences going there, which just about everybody had the opportunity to see ahead of time.
Yeah,
because you got them posted up, which is great. And those are still posted if you want to take a look. I think they'll be posted.
We've already posted today 3 mini-episodes, which are 3 short interviews that Chad was able to get. Mm-hmm. We got 100 pence.
Yep.
We got
Pablo Sandoval,
and we got Jeremy Affeld.
And Jeremy Affeld, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and then I think we're going to tag the end of this episode with
Matt Duffy.
Matt Duffy.
Mm-hmm. We got Matt Duffy.
We got post game today, which was actually everyone surrounded Blanco. I felt like Blanco's hit gave us the one run lead, which was all we ended up needing.
It was very important.
However,
it was a game winning RBI.
I feel like
technically.
The Duffy hit was actually the hit that made it. Like we won the game. Like now
Duffy's,
we just won the game.
Duffy's was the hit that really took the wind out of the D-back sails.
Yeah, it ended the game essentially because the way runs were at this point game in this atmosphere in this weather whatever it was just hard to score tonight.
Yeah.
And that
I mean
it was
thick tonight. You know there was the fog was getting pretty pea soupy almost. Although it was
but you
high
saw Pablo's heat. I thought he got that all of that.
I thought it was
and
gone.
And that was a double.
I mean, Buster got into a couple here and there,
too.
Yeah,
they're just long fly balls,
Somebody hit one, like, warning track center field. Pence, I think. Got a real boomer.
Yeah, I think Pence hit... No. Well, okay, so there was Panic's home run that wasn't a home run.
Panic's
foul ball.
Yeah, Panic had a foul splash hit by, 2 feet?
It was like a Bonds splash hit. It was like...
That
was deep into the cove.
Way in the cove. It wasn't. It didn't scrape the pavilion. No.
It was way
there was no bouncing on the way down. Just
and then, of course, he ended up checking.
That got out in a hurry, too.
I did not expect that much pop from that kid. He's not a big guy.
He's had one home run.
Crap.
It was on the road, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now, he hit the crap out of that one.
I almost got panic in the clubhouse before the game, but so once I went down there, I actually got a chance to talk to Marty Lurie about what the hell am I doing down there, and he gave me some pointers. And Joe Castellano, very gracious, what have you. So, getting into the clubhouse though, first of all,
just don't eat the deli spread. And
pretty
be
much,
an
yeah.
Just be cool, man. It's fine.
Don't
be
ever
cool,
talk,
man. Be
don't
cool,
talk
man.
To Vogel Song before I start.
But when I did get down there and into the clubhouse, there were about 6 or 7 reporters, and it was the funniest thing. And it was like this after the game too. I think you'll attest to this, Willie. Even though it was more reporters, it was like a junior high dance because we had about 4, 5, 6, 7 reporters. Exactly. They were all crowded around together around the LCD with...
here's the thing. They all know each other, but they don't know the players that well.
And so there were all these players. Well, not all these players. There was about 15
reporters.
Players in the clubhouse at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was kind of like, so can I go ask someone a question? So Joe was there, and I was like, is it anyone free game? He's like, yeah, go ahead. I'm like, well, why aren't you? Like, you go first. He's like, oh, well, I'm setting up my stuff here. And, like, this dude... posts like 4 interviews a day.
He's
a seasoned veteran, you know, former ex-MLB host. He's got Jeremy Affeldt as a regular, you know, guest and all that stuff like that. So, first went up to Hunter Pence, and he was just over in the corner on his iPad mini, and because it was Gamers Night, this was a night that, you know, I was obviously hoping Willie was going
to
be there as well.
Yeah,
talk
I wanted to get a chance
gamer
to talk
with,
to him,
with Hunter, and I went up to him and said, hey, do you have a few minutes? And he's like, not right now. Come back later. And I looked down, and he was actually playing Hearthstone on his iPad mini at that moment. And I'm like, oh, you got a game going. And he's like, yeah. Come back later. And he just kind of brushed me away. And so I was like, no problem. Come back later.
You're playing Hearthstone. You know, you gotta concentrate.
I've watched over enough shoulders. That game is hard.
Oh, no, it's a hard game. So went over. Nice. Pablo was just chilling in his chair, reading his phone, and he looked really sleepy, but went up to him, asked him if he had a few minutes, and I know this is not an audio or a video podcast, but he kind of put his phone down, rubbed his eyes, rubbed his head, leaned back, and I was like, oh shit, here it comes, like, get the hell out of here. And he's like, yeah, okay. It's kind of like, oh, sorry, I'll leave if, you know, you don't want me. No, it's not you, it's me, I'm tired. It's kind of one of those things. But actually, it was a great interview. It was fun talking to him about his 3-home-run game. I asked him if that was the best moment of his career. He said absolutely. Wrapped it up with, have you ever had kale? And no, he's never had kale. He is not a fan of kale, even though he hasn't had it.
Look,
it's exactly
just,
like my children.
Kale is just one method.
Try this, honey. No, I don't like it. Well, you've never had it. How do you know if you don't like it if you don't have it? So I want to do that with Pablo next time.
Right. Yeah. You just show up with a thing of kale, and just Hunter is just like looking over your shoulder the whole time. So, like, what is he doing?
That was great. So I went back to Hunter, and he was totally gracious. He's like, oh, I was waiting for you. And so I did ask him some kind
gamer
of cross-world gamer baseball questions. You can listen to the interview. You'll hear it for yourself. It's right there on the audio. The first question I asked him, Hunter literally said, that's a weird question. I don't know how to answer that. What do you do at that point?
You kind of go.
You just kind of go. Right. Yeah, I suck. But no, it actually ended up being a fine interview. And afterwards, he was totally stoked because he told me, and this is all off the record, of course. He said, or off the recording.
The recording, right.
He said, oh, no one ever talks to me about,
right
yeah,
now,
not off the record, off the recording. He said, no one ever talks to me about gaming. He's like, this is great, man. So I proceeded
I
to talk
every,
to him about.
I was going
to
say, every time we show up, we do, because that's.
You wouldn't get that from the actual interview itself, because it wasn't about baseball until the end. And then Jeremy Affeldt had a few minutes, and he is a great interview. He is
Affeldt is such a good speaker in general. Like,
he's very articulate and cerebral, and even though it was right at the end, I was the last guy in the clubhouse. The Giants executive or player personnel manager was hovering over me and kind of was like, yeah, you need to go after I finished up, and I realized I was literally the last person in there.
You're like, oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Ah.
But as far as first experience in the clubhouse, it was pretty amazing. And so check it out. I've posted three interviews on torchcast.com.
You're
normally
not going to do a full interview in the clubhouse.
Each one is 3 to 6 minutes in that range.
Normal. That's not like normally. You wouldn't expect to get like a full one out of there. But what you got, is, you know, that's totally reasonable for a clubhouse. But I can totally see how you'd end up being the last one there. Like, people are going in there for sound bites most of the time.
Yeah.
And that's what most of the players
are. You're also
there weren't that many guys there.
But you're also going there for the first time ever. Like, you don't know necessarily when it's the right time to bail.
I just think that it's really funny.
I'm like, fat kid first time at a buffet. I'm just like, shit, man.
This
is... And all the other fat kids are like, dude, I've been here so many times. I'm sick of it. So, no, it was great. It was great. And then after the game, as you mentioned, we went down. That was Willie's first time in the clubhouse. A little weird. Strange, because now everybody's in towels and hanging out.
It's post-game.
Smell a lot of Pert Plus and other, you know.
It's post-game.
Yeah, it's post-game. And I saw some images I don't care to repeat on the podcast, but
it's
post-game. So it's just something I wasn't prepared for. But anyway,
it's post-game to refer to a lot of really uncomfortable situations. Now. Hey, did you hear about it's post-game?
It's post-game. So like you said, Willie, everybody crowded around Blanco, and Willie and I were kind of in the background going, well, we're not going to get shit from this. You know, no. And we talked about getting Romo, and he was over in the corner.
Romo was talking to somebody. I don't know who it was.
Like a friend or something.
They seemed like they were just chatting, so, yeah. But it would have been interesting to talk to him. But
I did say, on the way down, I was like, we got to get a soundbite from Duffy, because I'm really curious as to whether that was a straight butt or a safety squeeze.
Whether it was put on or whether it was, And, I mean, I agree, too, though, with what Willie said. I think Duffy's hit really... It took the wind out of the D-back sails, and there was something about that hit that felt different. I don't know if it's because I like Matt Duffy. I don't think that he's any danger of replacing any of the current starters at this point by a long shot. I think if anything, we're probably looking at like AAA next year, especially if the rumored AAA changes potentially happen and he ends up in Sacramento.
It's
an easy range. It's a 2-hour drive.
Yeah,
if they need him. I mean, but the thing is, you know, Duffy is, like, that situation is one of the prospects, one of the younger players, contributing to a team that's in the middle of a pennant race, and that's something that, like, when you see good teams firing on all cylinders, stuff like that happens. Stuff like Matt Duffy hitting a double, and then advancing to third, and then, you know, getting a run home on a sack fly. You don't see that on a team that's scuffling. This is one of those situations where you're getting contributions from guys up and down the lineup, up and down the bench. You know, you didn't see the lineup change at all tonight, but we got a couple of pinch hitters, especially Duffy was the main one. Yeah. And just getting that opportunity to see him go in there and then contribute, it felt different from the other hits, because the other guys in the lineup, we saw them up and down in the lineup the entire night. Duffy came in, had one shot, is a young kid, still has some things to prove, and did it. Went out there, did it, got that crucial hit, really drove the nail through. And then just kind of, like, put the game away by making it all the way around. You know, it's when the prospects start doing stuff like that, I think it feels different. And I'm not talking about prospects like Jorge Soler. I'm talking about prospects like Matt Duffy.
Yeah. Where, completely where, different level.
Yeah. He's not a fringe prospect, but he's not a...
No, but he's not a...
He was in double A.
He's not a Baez or a Soler. Waiting for him. He was going to be here any moment, and he was going to be the second baseman of the future.
Yeah, he's not a Buster Posey. Yeah. You know, but...
There's no way he... expected to be called up to the show this year, and probably not even next year.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is like all great. I mean,
he's got probably a lot of weight to put on at some point in his career to be. I mean, he's a small guy.
He's smaller
than both of us. We were standing there talking to him, and he's like just normal size. He looks super like a kid. Like he just.
Mm. I mean, Buster Posey has a baby face. Matt Duffy. He's got him.
He's a baby.
Yeah.
He is a baby.
But he's got baby everything. Like he's
baby everything. Yeah. Yeah. He's like about a $1.60 if he's lucky.
Yeah.
So he's saying it's all bay every bay. So.
Yeah.
No, but so all the reporters crowded around Blanco,
right.
And then you know we had mentioned Duffy before, and sure enough, we turn around and I was like, "Hey Willie, that's
Matt Duffy.
Duffy. Wait, nameplate says Matt Duffy. That's Duffy. That's Matt. Let's go." And so we walked right over, and no one was there.
I'm going to take 5 minutes to make sure that this is Matt Duffy before I actually walk over.
Well, he's like, "No, I'm Joe Panic. Sorry, you know."
Well, somebody else came over. I don't know who that
guy
was, but he came over. Like,
we went over
somebody to, you know, I'm not sure if he was on his way over there anyway, or if it was one of those like, they're going over, I'll go too.
Yeah, sure, that's right.
Yeah, we all went over together at the same time at that point, and got a chance to talk to him for a little bit, and he was cool. It was good conversation. It didn't seem like he was giving like the answers I'm supposed to give. He was just like trying to
give answers.
How it all really, you know.
Yeah, we asked him about not only the, you know, was that a safety squeeze or straight bunt, and he said it was safety squeeze two times, and then it was called off after the 2-0 pitch.
Which made sense.
Yeah, and that makes sense. They're both curveballs. The hit was a fastball that he pulled down the line.
Yeah, I mean, and he was starting to get more hitters pitches after. I mean, because there was just no command on that.
Yeah, and then it was...
Any of the D-backs bullpen, interestingly.
Kind of questions like, you know, look, you get your starter in double A, you get 20, 30 pitches a week, and now you're getting, or 20, 30 at-bats a week, now you're getting 2 at-bats a week. You know, how hard is that adjustment to make? And it's the major leagues. I mean, how do you stay ready? And so he was very forthcoming about it. He realized this is like the only chance he has. He's trying to prepare as much as he can. It's really hard to do so.
As much as you can while you're here, But actually, we're going to put this actual interview we got at the end of this episode, so you guys will be able to hear it. And it was nice. It was cool getting to hear from him. And I really did think that, you know, even though everyone surrounded Blanco, and he got 2 hits and a stolen base tonight. He had a great game.
Duffy had a really good contribution as a pinch
hitter.
That hit was
huge.
Yeah,
and he had a huge impact on this game, so it was really cool.
And it was really cool to hear his opinion about Joe Panic and Buster Posey. He had nothing but incredible things to say about Joe Panic, saying, "Look, him and I are in the same position. Like, we're from the same level.
Right.
But, you know, the way he's carrying himself is like a veteran. I mean,
yeah.
he's in awe of him. And then he talks about Buster Posey.
Yeah, like, now, like, that's like
the he's guy. Like, he said, he seems to know what pitch is coming. And he is so calm, and he seems to be able to control everything.
He's like the Yoda of baseball. He's got it. He's got it figured out, man.
And it's really cool to see another major leaguer.
You will throw,
granted, right? A new major leaguer just have this, just be in awe of another one. You know, it's pretty cool.
And I mean, you know, and there are guys that I'm sure that Posey had a similar look at when he was younger. Although at this point, I think he's probably grown enough to kind of like.
But he's the man now.
He's
the man now. He's
the man now, dog.
I have something
for you guys, actually. So, from what you saw today, obviously, we saw an Arizona team that's been limping along, is maybe a good word. It's been rough for Arizona. But
they did not play good ball tonight.
They did not. Well, I mean, they started out playing okay ball, and then they quickly degraded into, we're really sorry that we showed up. Obviously, playing against the D-backs is going to be a pretty different feeling than playing against the Dodgers. This is pretty nice for us, but I mean, this is watching a team that has bullpen implosions. Like the discipline of our guys was at least okay plus today, because there was no control on the D-backs side whatsoever.
But I think you can say right now that coming down the stretch, even though we haven't gained much ground since getting it to two is the closest we've gotten, even though we haven't gained much ground since that time, you can definitely look at how the Dodgers have been playing and how we've been playing. You can say the Giants look like more of the poised team at this point. Dodgers look like the team that is holding
advantage of mistakes.
About to blow up potentially at any moment. The Giants don't look like that team anymore.
The thing with the Dodgers, though, is if they do, they could blow up in either direction because
much talent on that team.
Conversely, I think Puig's OPS in the last, month plus is 220.
Not good at all.
Or something. I mean, you know, they don't look like they've got it together, but they haven't pulled an A's yet.
Sure.
So I feel really bad about that because I like the A's. We've talked about this, but
Willie doesn't.
That's okay. The A's are there's nosedive and there's free fall.
The A's are basically doing what the Giants did, but we did it at the beginning.
That's pretty much what I've been saying. The A's are doing the thing the Giants did, but they're doing it later so people notice it more.
Yep.
Because when we do it in the middle of the season, it doesn't look like choking.
But well, everybody really, noticed
it's
it.
It's not, you know, it's the same
thing. It was very noticeable when the Giants did it.
Oh, it was very noticeable.
Yeah, they still have a better record than the Giants.
It was going from the best team in baseball to the worst team in baseball in a matter of moments. And they basically did the same shit.
Yeah.
However, they're in the division with the other best team in baseball.
And with one of the surprising and upcoming best teams in baseball.
The other thing that's weird about the A's situation is they made all those moves and nobody else, you know, made them. Like, they made the most moves.
Like them, right.
Like, they made the what everyone thought was these were the moves that were going to get them over the top.
For sure.
And I mean, they have not worked out that way.
Their pitching hasn't been as good as expected, and their offense has plummeted. They got rid of Cespedes.
Their offense two top-tier pitches to your team, and then you trade Cespedes.
Doolittle was lost to injury, and, Hamill just kind of bombed out and went back to being Jason Hamill again.
Yeah. I can't say that I feel really bad about things for them, but you know.
We've got, you know, the Dodgers are coming up. That's.
I mean, it all hinges on that. No matter how we're doing and where we're, you know, we're gaining ground or we're losing ground.
I asked all three players before the game the standard question. I know you guys are professionals. Do you look at this game any differently than the upcoming Dodgers series? And you got the company line. Tonight is tonight's game. Yep. This is the game we have to concentrate on. It still counts as one game, just like the Dodgers. Yep. I don't even look at the Dodgers right now. I mean, I expected that answer.
Sure.
I've heard it on TV a million times, but I had to ask it.
I'm just in case someone said something different. I got to say, it's I honestly believe that's how it is.
The pregame, you have to do that.
You have to.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you lose focus, you'll lose.
I mean, because look at if they go in and they lose three games to Arizona.
Then you go to the Dodgers going, oh, shit.
And the Dodgers, of course, don't lose, you know, they're not going to lose games to Arizona, come on. And, you know, you go in, you have to keep the team level, because if you don't, the NL West right now is pretty much the Dodgers and the Giants attempting to see how many, you know, inferior opponents they can beat on in an attempt to get to each other at this point. And the Padres will surprise you sometimes. The Rockies will surprise the Giants sometimes because they're the Rockies. But we're done with
not
them.
Not the
so
Dodgers.
Okay.
Yeah, we're done with them.
The D-backs are just terrible this year. And so, you know, if the D-backs are going to roll over for both teams, that runs about even. But it's if you lose focus for 1 second, if you lose a game to the D-backs,
yeah.
you're now a game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We have to beat up on the D-backs. And yeah, I think tomorrow's game is a big game. Tomorrow's game is actually absolutely a huge game because
tomorrow's game is huge.
If we go into the Dodgers series and we're down by one and a half. Yeah, 1.5. Like it's a totally different story. You could
then 3.5. I agree.
Yeah, win that series, and then all of a sudden it's like we're right there.
Yeah, I mean, if they go and they tread water and go 2.5 in like they are right now, you could win 2 out of 3 and only be 1.5 behind. And
series. They're going in, you know, it depends on.
That's one more series, yeah.
It just depends on how the Dodgers.
We're coming down to it. We're starting talking like this is the point of the season where we're starting talking about like the math situations. Like if we do this and that and the other thing.
Yeah, but like 6 weeks ago when they were, you know, 6 games back or whatever, and we thought that the season was over.
Yeah, forget it. Let's start thinking about next year.
Would we have thought the Giants would have been in this situation at this point?
No, we weren't thinking that at all. We were really even thinking wild card at that point. We were like, well, maybe.
Not even maybe wild card if we're lucky.
So bad, yeah. And then all of a sudden,
now
it's
wild
like,
card
oh,
seems
hey.
Sewn up, and now it's all about the division.
Yeah. You know, and obviously, you never want to guarantee anything sewn up. But wild card looks good.
It's going to take quite a bit of craziness.
The opportunity to push the struggling Dodgers into a 1-game wild card spot. Man, if we could do that, that would be great.
It would be insane. Because think about that, they got to throw Kershaw.
Have two errors in one inning and lose a wild card.
Who knows? Maybe the Kershaw because they've set their the Dodgers have set their rotation, for us. And who knows if they even have Kershaw for the 1-game playoff?
We're facing Kershaw twice, aren't we?
We're facing all the dudes. We're facing Kershaw, Greinke, and Ryu.
Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty much how it's gonna be.
Yep.
So we're gonna have to beat those. We're gonna have to be two.
Is Kershaw going Friday?
It might be Saturday, but I'm not sure.
We are going Saturday.
Yeah, we're gonna be there on Saturday.
It's Al, and with Ryu, it's get to him in the first inning or else Al.
Saturday is a big day for us. We'll be there.
You gotta get to Ryu early.
I think we gotta wrap this one up though, because I gotta go. No one else is in this bar. Should probably bail.
Yeah,
that seems like a safe idea.
So quickly before we wrap it up, why will we win it all? Ben, start with you.
Pitching looks really good up and down the rotation and up and down the bullpen. It's not just that the offense is starting to click. It's also that our pitchers are getting themselves out of situations that they were not getting themselves out of in June and July. That, you know, if when Peavy had his meltdown in New York, you went, well, there goes that. But you weren't nearly as surprised because that's what the entire team was doing. Although Peavy's, like, 6 no-hit innings were sort of the – like one of the things that you look at when you say, well, this is where things slowly tilted towards turning around.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that the team does not get out of that at that time. And now we're seeing stuff like Vogelsong gets bases loaded and you go, oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
And he gets out of it.
And it doesn't come. Yeah.
I mean, you're waving the red cape in front of him as far as Lincecum being on the mound, but the fact remains. And I mean, the bullpen went through a really similar implosion during that same time. Affelt wasn't. I mean, there was a period Affelt was having trouble getting outs. Casilla was on and off. Machi stopped being the 0.63 ERA Machi and stopped vulturing wins. And obviously Romo had plenty of major meltdowns at just the wrong time. And when they click, they tend to click as a unit. It's either one of them is going wrong, none of them, or all of them are going wrong.
Yeah.
And when they're
right now,
on,
none
they
of them,
all
nobody's
kind
going
of,
wrong right now. So
yeah, I mean stuff. we've had a couple of additions that are going really well as well, and you know that's going to be that even if they don't go postseason roster, they're going to be on that stretch.
Yeah.
To get there,
they're going to get.
So if we're
that,
if we're going to win it all, it's going to be because the pitching up and down the rotation and bullpen looks really solid, is getting out of jams, is cleaning up their own messes,
yeah,
and is really making their case for saying offense, it is up to you to carry this. So I mean that's what
we'll keep you in the game. No, I absolutely agree. I think I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna say we're gonna win it all because Pence is legging out infield ground balls.
Yep.
In the bottom 100%. Of the 8th or whatever with a 4-run lead.
Yep.
And when your team is playing like that, there's nothing is being taken for granted. You've got a nice lead. and Bochy comes in and he makes the move. You've got a nice lead, and Pence runs as hard as he fucking can down that line on an infield. And, you know, you've got a nice lead, just, and everyone
no
is
let up.
Diving, doing it. You know, I mean, Crawford made some nice plays there towards the end.
Panic made a great play today.
Like, all these guys are playing their hearts out right now and not taking anything for granted. They're not half-assing a moment. And
if anything, I feel like this is the way a team does play. June and July told you, it doesn't matter what your lead's at, there's always a chance you will cough it up.
This is the way a team plays that gets to the playoffs and then does damage in the playoffs. They play like this.
Yeah.
They don't ever take a playoff, and they go hard all the time. That's what they're doing right now.
Foot on the gas the whole way.
That's what they're doing. Agreed. Chad finishes off.
So when I talked to Hunter Pence, he said, you know,
name dropper.
Not where I was going.
When Hunter and I had a chat over a podcast
about the Giants.
Exactly. That should be okay.
Right. When Hunter and I had a fireside game in the
clubhouse. When Hunter came to my house the other day,
and he gave me a massage.
And he picked me up from work.
No.
Kale shakes.
I had not heard that Bochy had talked to the players, and this might have been published somewhere else, but he said, you know, we don't treat each game differently. Every game is important at this point. But he said Bochy talked to them just recently about pushing like they did in the 2010 season, pushing like they did in the 2012 season, and especially pushing like they did when their backs were against the wall against Cincinnati and St. Louis. And that is what he wants his players to push like right now.
Right.
Pretend like you are down.
Play like you're going
to
be out.
To your elimination game. These are all elimination games. Play like it is your last game. And you know, Hunter Pence obviously is the rallying
coach. The king of playing like it's your last game, right?
And the sunflower seed distributor of all kind. I think that the players completely understand what is going on. And if they treat this as they did with their crazy stretch run of 2010 and their playoff run of 2012, they are clicking on all cylinders. Their pitching is good. Their hitting is good. Mm-hmm. Aside from the Colorado series, which is an outlier because it's Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado.
They are proving that they are absolutely committed to this. And I have, I mean, I really don't have much of a doubt that they're going to take 4 out of 6 from the Dodgers. And if they do that, they're going to take the West. And they don't have to deal with a fucking wild card.
Right.
Because that is just a crapshoot in itself. So
it's a one game play. It's,
I just think that the managerial skills of Bruce Bochy completely destroy Don Mattingly.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And it's just a matter of...
Don Mattingly is flying by on pure talent.
Yeah.
Don Mattingly is getting by because of, like, Adrian Gonzalez at this point.
Dodgers are more talented. Giants have the better manager.
Don Mattingly is,
and I think that's why
is the Yasiel Puig of managers. He's just like, hey, man, I'm just out here hustling.
I'll show.
It's like,
I'll show.
You know, sometimes I overthrow first base when I'm trying to weirdly throw somebody out on the back end of a pop-up.
Sometimes
I do that.
The twice was the best
one play. Little league home run.
Whoops. All right.
It's not just him, though, man. People aren't backing up bags on that team. There's a lot of things going wrong. And that's Mattingly's not teaching. Like, watch the Giants. Watch a guy like Susak come up from, you know, AAA, right? And watch him always run down the line to back up for his base.
Right.
Yeah. Like, watch them never mess up. Watch a guy make one mistake. I saw, I think it was Vogelsong maybe in one game, didn't back up the plate, and I haven't seen him make the mistake since. Like, it's just like that.
You learn.
That shit gets pointed out on this team.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah, that's not kangaroo court.
You don't do fundamentals.
Yeah.
Don't
that is serious shit. Yeah.
Like, oh, you're not hustling down the line, Buster Posey. You're our MVP star player, but you back first base up, you asshole.
Yeah.
That's a ground ball to shortstop.
Right.
What else are you doing? You just hanging out?
Right.
Yeah. No, that's the way the Giants are playing. That's not the way the Dodgers are playing. Like, that's why you give. That's why they all score when the Dodgers overthrow bases.
Because no one is backing up the play. It's like you overthrow and it's almost in the seats,
and
bouncing off
the wall.
If the Giants face the Dodgers in the playoffs, God forbid, that would be an incredible series.
It'd be so amazing if it came down to somebody not backing up.
Exactly. I was thinking Game 7, Game 5, whatever it is.
You're just sitting there,
and you
just
have
like,
Puig making 2 errors, which cost them.
I was going to say it's like 4-4.
You're the best ever.
And it's like the 8th, and AJLS doesn't back up first base, and you're just
I would love it. And then you know what would be the best thing too? The best thing too would be if it was Michael Morris who scored that run, because he is the slowest motherfucker ever.
And like, just rip off his jersey. And,
Like, he is the modern Benji Molina on our team.
Yeah, I was
like,
going to say, you
rumbling
just...
rumbling around the bases. But if they can't even get that guy, that would be beautiful.
It's just, it's a walk-off, didn't back up first place, first base. It's not, we don't even call it a walk-off hit. It's a walk-off, didn't back up first.
So, that's going to do it for episode 70.1. Bonus-ode.
Just real quick, all three of us are going to be...
At the park on Saturday,
we will have clubhouse access, so we're going to be...
there's going to be a lot of interviews and all that kind of crap.
Talking to Clayton Kershaw and Yasiel Puig, clearly.
Obviously.
No, I have an offer. I have an offer from...
That's right. Chad's going to get...
from a Spanish baseball writer to translate Yasiel Puig for us.
So we can talk to Puig.
Just saying. I mean, come on. Look, we cover the Giants, but wouldn't that be like kind of cool to go in there and get a...
I'm going
to
tell him, like, you know, I just don't really like you very much.
So how'd you like those two errors that you had in one inning?
So how is it backing up first
base? How does it feel to set baseball back 10 years?
How is it having your OPS at 200 for the last 2 months? No. Anyway, all three of us will be there, so look for us on Saturday. I think that's going to be Kershaw versus, I want to say Petit, but someone.
I don't think it's
Petit. No, because he just pitched last night.
I think it might
be Bumgarner's going Friday night against Ryu.
So it's probably going to be Hudson then.
Could be Huddy. Yeah, okay. Anyway, we'll be there.
All right, cool. Follow us on Twitter, at TorchCast. Individually, we are at Willie Dills, at Fried Duck, and at ChadK21. You can also find us on TorchCast.com, Facebook, all the crap. Go do it. I want to thank whoever posted the Will Clark interview on Reddit. That was cool. We're obviously not going to do all that shit ourselves. So somebody posted it on there. That was awesome.
Sweet.
Keep doing that kind of stuff. If you find something of ours that you think is shareable on that, that's cool.
We're all about it.
I'm going to try to go to, there's a SF Giants Reddit meetup. I'm going to try to go to. I think it's on the 20th or something like that.
I'm probably
Yeah, but it sounds really fun. Sounds awesome.
I'm going to try
to make it out to that. I think it's just, I don't think it's like at the ballpark. I think it's just meeting at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone hangs out and watches the game. So,
as you do.
That sounds pretty sweet.
So we'll try to make it out.
We'll probably talk about it and tweet about it if we get it going. And that's going to do it for 70.1. We'll see you guys next time. Boom.
Hey, don't turn off the podcast just yet. We have an interview with Matt Duffy coming right up. Hey, so about that at-bat you had there in the eighth inning, was it a straight bunt sign or was actually a safety squeeze was on?
It was a safety squeeze. And once the guy threw the two curveballs for balls, Boach took it off and gave me the freedom to swing. And I was just looking for something up to get a barrel on, hopefully get a sack fly out of it, and luckily found some grass.
Yeah. What was that pitch that you hit? Was that a straight fastball? Because you had two curveballs first, right?
Yeah, fastball up and away.
And so, I mean, how is it? Obviously, you're coming up from AA. You don't have a tremendous amount of at-bats when you're up here, but you take every at-bat, you know, as gold, I would think. I mean, what is the adrenaline rush going from AA to the major leagues and only getting a bat or two a week?
It definitely, every at-bat feels like your first at-bat of the season in terms of, like you said, the adrenaline rush. And that's the challenge, is calming yourself down and relaxing your muscles so you can just see the ball and react. That's coming as I'm getting more at-bats, but like you said, I mean, it's still tough not getting as many bats, but they do a good job preparing us, letting us know what the guy has, what he likes to throw in certain situations, and you just go up there, taking that information, see it, and try to relax and hit the ball.
Going from, you know, whatever, 20 at-bats a week to two, I mean, is that a tough adjustment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, getting more at-bats, I like to be more selective, and, you know, like you said, when you only get two, you might get those just two pitches to hit in a week, so you got to be ready for those pitches. So I would say being ready to hit more often is also a challenge and an adjustment.
How difficult is it to switch from I'm up here to bunt to all of a sudden he takes it off and now your game plan is completely different?
I kind of half expected it once it got to 2-0, just because, you know, the situation, it's more of a damage count than a bunting count. I mean, I was ready to bunt if you still wanted me to, but being that I half expected it, I kind of wasn't too surprised, and I was ready and, you know, able to be aggressive from there.
It seems that, I guess this is the way it is with winning teams, but it's somebody different, it's a couple different guys each night. Last night we're over there talking to Panic, tonight we're here talking to you, I mean, it's Posey last week. I mean, is this just the way, you know, teams win championships?
Yeah, it's definitely a part of it. I was telling Amy that hitting is contagious, I feel, and pitching as well. I mean, our pitchers have been throwing up quality start after quality start, it seems like. I can't remember the last time they didn't get into the fifth or sixth inning with, you know, very few runs giving us a chance to win games. So, yeah, I mean, everybody seems to be contributing. And I panic just watching him from my point of view. He's a rookie, but he doesn't carry himself like it. Granted, he's had more at-bats than me, but he carries himself with that relaxed confidence that seeing him do that gives me confidence to be able to do that because he's kind of in a similar situation. Granted, like I said, more at-bats, but still thrust into the middle of a pennant race as a rookie. So watching him helps a lot. And Buster. I can't even begin to describe how much he impresses me. It seems like he's always ready to hit, and he's always taking borderline pitches that it looks like he knows are coming, and I don't know, so calm all the time. And watching those two guys especially, everybody but those two really stand out to give me confidence to relax and play.
And how does it feel to contribute to it? I mean, like you were talking about, you don't get to play that often, one at bat here and there. And yet, you know, tonight you take advantage of that at bat, you know, as big an at bat as anybody had. You know, as you drive home tonight, how you feel?
I mean, it feels awesome. And the skipper, right? It's, like you said, it's tougher when you don't get as many at bats, but it's definitely a good feeling. I mean, I'm not going to downplay that at all, but tomorrow's a new day, and, you know, at this point, every single game is going to count. We got six coming up with the Dodgers, and while it is a good feeling, I do have to prepare myself like I'm going to play tomorrow and like I'm going to be in the same situation tomorrow, and knowing that the fact that I had success tonight doesn't mean I'm going to have success tomorrow, so I have to prepare myself the same way, and so, yeah, it's exciting, but preparation doesn't end.
Thanks.
No
Thanks,
problem, guys. Thank you.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.